You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. From the Green Room, I'm Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss. Happy holidays, everybody. We are not here with you right now. It's a weird meta thing.
We're ghosts.
Yes. Ghosts of holidays past and MLS futures. I don't know. Whatever we are. We're here with Alan Gordon in just a second. The holiday special has rolled on. We hope you enjoyed Maurice Adue. Quick Dave, give him the sell on Alan Gordon.
I don't think you can.
Make the run.
But that's the point.
Yeah.
Right? It's Alan Gordon. We needed, 45 minutes? And we could have gone for 25 to 45 minutes more.
I mean, we could have sat down for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
But probably would have been over some
but
beverages.
Just a guy who loved the game. Didn't maybe in the beginning and then fell in love with the sport and has had arguably the most fun MLS career. The Goonies. Galaxy at their peak, Galaxy at their lows. Knocking around in MLS. Portland Timbers A-League years. Like so many cool moments that he's been associated with. And mainly that fans always want more from him. Fans sometimes get more from him. Sometimes they don't.
He gets pulled at and he has this public persona. I thought it was interesting where he came from. Because he's a Yapavai Community College guy from Arizona. And there's a lot of MLS guys like that, but his path is a little bit different. I think it was just an out for him, out of a tough life for him in adolescence. He goes through all that, and you know what? Let's let Alan tell the story. Here we go.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Happy holidays, and what a holiday it will be for you, because we have Alan Gordon in the green room with us. What's up, man? Happy retirement? Yeah, is it happy? Is it sad?
You know, it's a little of both. You know, a lot of guys joke around with me because I've thrown retirement parties for 3 years straight.
And boy, each one,
each one gets better. So I'm thinking maybe I want to run it back one more time.
Yeah, why stop now? If you got people coming,
just Paul Pierce this thing in like in August, pick a contender and come back.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Everybody could use late goal, right?
Yeah.
But it's been great. Spent a lot of time with the family. Trying to figure out what's next, you know, all that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been good.
I don't want to put the pressure on you right now, but the best we've ever done in here for story time, Pescadito Ruiz is number one, but number two is Mike McGee for sure. McGee had some stories. McGee had some laughs. I know you know Mike well. I expect your competitive juices to start flowing a little bit right now.
I mean, I know them both well, and that is a lot of pressure because those are two of the league's biggest legends that have ever, you know, ever been mentioned, you know, in the same breath as MLS. And I'm telling you right now, I cannot live up to either of those guys. I've been out with both of them, and I just cannot hang, so I'll do my best.
Someday we will have the non-in-studio edition of MLS Storytime, couple beers, the brown liquor Storytime
even
edition.
Without that, who else goes in that legendary category? Like, who's the characters, the larger-than-life people?
Well, Clint Mathis, of course. He's a legend. I crossed paths with him. You know, I don't know. It's tough to be put on the spot like that. But, just the fact that you mentioned those two guys, I mean, Mike McGee is an all-time legend. And everybody knows that Fish's Carlos Ruiz, is a super, super legend. So
take me back inside those LA Galaxy locker rooms. I mean, I want to call you Alan Gordon, you know, Goonie, late goal guy, but you're also the star of the Beckham experiment. I mean, you were the star of that book. Beckham didn't talk. It was basically the Alan Gordon experiment. But those locker rooms with McGee, with Landon, then Omar comes in and he's throwing his robe open after titles. And Keno and Beckham, we didn't even mention. And Bruce at the head of it all. What was it like to be in that locker room at that time?
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was an unbelievable experience. I feel very fortunate and lucky to be a part of, you know, the names that you mentioned. When Bex came in, it was like being on the road with the Beatles, you know, in the 60s. It was outrageous because, you know, the league wasn't very big. Nobody knew who we were in L.A. I mean, nobody knew who we were. We used to go in the airports, and the most common question we got asked is, are you guys some kind of college team? Because we'd be wearing our polos, you know, and we'd be like, no, you know, we're a professional team. And they'd say, well, is this your full-time job? And we'd be like, yeah, we get paid for it, you know. Yeah, we're doing all right. But it was crazy. And then overnight, David comes, and we're sitting on the bus. Everywhere we went, we were playing in football stadiums because, you know, there wasn't many soccer stadiums back then. But even if, you know, they were filling football stadiums. And so I'm a young kid, and I come from playing at Oregon State with 100 people to, you know, 65,000 at Meadowlands, you know, and that was David's first game. And we were just sitting on the bus, and there were thousands of Beckham jerseys before he even touched the field. It was madness.
I want to hear about that game.
That was one of the sparks for me of MLS fandom. That was one of the
– It was
Josie,
arguably the best game
JPA.
In MLS history.
It was wild. It was wild. I mean, it just – I mean, both teams were scoring goals. It was exciting. Everybody was up for it. It was something new to us all. You know, the crowd was going crazy. You know, most of us hadn't experienced crowds like that at that point. Because that was the beginning of it in the MLS. You know, we were, you know, we would get some decent crowds at what was back then the Home Depot, but it was 30,000 max. You know, this was 65,000, so it just blew up overnight. And you had Juan Pablo Angel on the other side, and he was a beast back then. He was probably the league's best striker at the time, and he was scoring and we were scoring, you know, and Bex was getting assists off the corner kicks and everybody was going nuts. I just remember, you know, when he would take a corner kick and everybody would just flood to that side, you know, just to get a picture of David. And I was just like, I was in the game, but I was just like, wow, this is crazy.
his first appearance, actually, I think it was Chelsea, I remember, and his ankle was messed up. You came off for Beckham. Did you give me good words of advice before you got on the field? You know, keep your head. I know it's a big event, man, but you're going to be all right. Get out there. LA Galaxy soccer.
Yeah, I wish. No, I was just deer in headlights at that point. It was all really fun and cool, and I remember it like it was yesterday, you know, and I was the lucky one that got my name called to come out for Beck. So I got a little bit of I think I was on Jeopardy. As a question, you know, how many people can say that?
And also, how many people are getting that on Jeopardy? Like, right. That you are an incredible mind.
Right.
If you have that as well as, like, you know, the War of 1812 back to front.
Right. If you know who Alan Gordon is.
No, just that moment. Look, you're a legend at this point, Alan. Everybody knows your name.
Yeah, no, so that was really fun. And that experience was cool. And Chelsea had just come off winning the Champions League at that point. So they were one of the world's best teams, and it was fun, man. It was really cool.
Who were you at that time? Tell me. I mean, if people have read the Beckham Experiment, I think they have a little bit of a feel, but take us inside your life, your career at that moment.
Well, at that point, I was surviving in the MLS strictly based on the fact that I was good in the locker room and that guys liked me. I was really raw. I had a little bit of potential, I guess you would say, and that's why they kept me on. But at that point, I was not very good. I'll say it myself, you know. And I was just trying to hang in there. I was making you know, $24,000 a year, and hoping that one day I'd make $75,000 because, you know, some of the other guys were. So I was saying, if I could get to $75,000, that would, you know, I'd be set for life. You know, living in a crowded apartment with other players. And we were just – it was like a college all-star league, you know, for a lot of us. You know, we were living the college life, but we were playing professional soccer. And then when David came in, it all kind of started to get real and it started to get a little bit more serious. So the pressure kind of was getting ramped up at that point because, you know, with Beckham came the expectations to win.
before you get to the Galaxy there, you don't get drafted. You go play for the Portland Timbers in the A-League at the time.
That's
right. I
don't
think it was USL yet. Now we know Timbers, Seattle, Vancouver, what it looks like. What was it like in 04?
It was awesome. It was crazy. They had 10,000 strong, the Timbers Army. It was like the modern day Cincinnati, right? The Cincinnati's got a big following and they're coming up, but Portland always had that good following. So I got there and I didn't know what to expect, and we had a huge crowd. We played Seattle. I don't know what they call it. It was kind of a classical match. But it was a rivalry. We played them in the first game, and I scored in 30 seconds into the game. I scored my first goal, first professional goal. The crowd was going crazy, and that kind of it fueled my love for the game, because at that point I had never been really a serious soccer player. I was a baseball player. I was just kind of trying to figure it out. I got drafted, not sure how I did. And then I felt that energy from the crowd, and I was like, I want more of that.
You were a baseball player.
I was a baseball player growing up. Yeah, I played soccer on the side, but I wanted to be a pro baseball player.
When did soccer kind of take over
Richie
for you?
Richie Sexton over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I'm looking at your college career. There's something in the water in Arizona. Both you and Roger Espinoza, Yavapai, Rough yeah. Riders, baby.
That's right.
TID.
That's right. On the map. Robbie Finley, Justin Miram all went to this little JC in Prescott, Arizona. If you want to look up Yavapai soccer, it's out. I mean, the record is outstanding. They're like 469-12. It's a powerhouse, and that's where my true love for soccer came in.
Were you playing baseball too, or was it just soccer at that time?
Well, this is it's a long story. It's long. It's too long for this podcast. But I went through a really rough patch in high school. Well, I think I mentioned some of that in the David Experiment mm-hmm. book, where I lost my way. I got kicked out of my house at 15, and soccer and baseball kind of, were secondary to me, kind of just surviving on my own, bouncing from couch to couch. My arm gave out in baseball. I wasn't able to play anymore, and the only people in my life were people from my club soccer team who wasn't very good. We weren't serious, but I was the only guy that could score goals. And so they said, keep coming out, keep coming out, keep coming out. And this coach, Mike Pantaleone from Yavapai Soccer, this is when my life was really headed towards the gutter. He came out to a game and he approached me and said, hey, I want you to come play college. I had never thought that I was going to play college soccer in my entire life. But he offered it to me. And I remember my mom had come and watched me play. I wasn't living with her but my mom just starts crying, And I was like, I don't have any money. He said, you don't need any money. Just come up to Yavapai and I'll take care of you. And I went up there and it was a fantastic, unbelievable experience with rich history. And I just wanted to be as good as the guys that he had on the top of the list. And, one step at a time, I went through my college career, got, picked up by Oregon State after my second year, and still never thought I was going to be. I was just ecstatic that I was D1. And then I eventually got drafted, it just kind of happened in a blur, and I was never thinking about the next step. I was always thinking about, what am I doing right now? And this is great. This is the best part of my life.
When did you realize that you loved the game? Because it sounds like it was a good stepping stone for you. The relationships were amazing, but that love part, when did that kind of click for you?
To be honest, it was when my kids were born. When my oldest turned about 2 years old, two and a half, and I started bringing him into trainings and to the locker room, and the guys loved him, and he loved soccer more than I ever did. And the beginning part of my career, it wasn't very fun for me because I wasn't as good as I wanted to be. The fans were kind of giving me a hard time because they saw it. They wanted a big time striker on the Galaxy, and I wasn't feeling that spot that they wanted. And it was tough. It was stressful. And I was just like, man, soccer's, it's tough. And so I kind of got into a bad place where I was jaded a little bit by soccer. And I was just like, this is work, and then my oldest Reese was born and he loved it. And then he worshiped me because I was this, you know, professional soccer player, and he was coming, and he just looked at me, and through him, that was our connection. So then I just, me and him were just watching games because he wanted to watch games, and I was like, and my love just grew and grew and grew. And then, you know, that was the part of my career where I got traded to Toronto and I started doing well there and the fans liked me. And then I went to San Jose and the fans embraced me there and we had really good years. And so it kind of just built from there. And then I was always trying to catch up to really being appreciative of what I've been blessed to do. Because I should have never been here. I should have never been playing professional soccer. And I really was trying the later part of my career is to really, like, embrace how special it really is.
How often do you think about, you know, before your time in high school or not thinking you were ever going to make it? How often does that come up in your mind?
Not very often. Every now and again, it feels like a different life to me. It really does. I feel like I've lived two lives. You know, all that kind of stuff was a blur to me, and I've kind of blocked it out in a lot of ways. But it comes up every now and again, and I go, wow. Or I see somebody back in those days, and I'm just like, I can't believe we were doing that back then. And I can't believe, you know, they're more shocked than I am, you know, what I've done. And, you know, and it's been really cool.
So you get traded to the Earthquakes, and that is – that's the Goonies, and that's the Bash Brothers, and you and Lenny, and Wando comes out of nowhere. And you have this season that I remember at the time, I had just started working here at MLS, and we were all just kind of in shock and awe. There's no real other way to put it. Just this team seemingly coming out of nowhere in a lot of ways and becoming a juggernaut and madly entertaining, and Buckshaw's bumping, and you and Lenny are the way to get clicks. Like, if we write about the Bash Brothers – hate clicks, love clicks, everybody wants a piece. You got traded there and you thought, what? And then how did this all develop? What happened?
It was crazy. It was just a perfect storm of rejects. It really was. We were all rejects in our own right. And I don't want to speak for everybody because there were some good players there, but we had all been rejected at some form or another. And Frank brought us all together. And Frank, you know, he was an old school coach and he wanted good guys in the locker room. You know, above all else, and he found real value in, you know, the strength of the camaraderie of a locker room. And I've played 15 years, and some years are good and some years are bad in the locker room, and when it clicks, it really clicks. And guys have had their own versions of it, but I think that was one of the most special locker rooms that was ever assembled in the MLS, because we were all kind of old school guys. There wasn't any egos. You know, Wando was our best player, and you guys have met Wando. I mean,
Wando's a guy that, like, couldn't get on the field for the Dynamo. That basically, it was like a gift to send him home to
right.
San Jose and blew
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but he's never changed. He's always been one of the guys, a good guy. We were all hanging out, and we were having fun, man. We were having so much fun, and it showed on the field. We were able to come away with, you know, who knows how many comebacks we came. It was insanity. And it was a special time, man. It was a special year, and I'll never forget it.
We love the new soccer-specific stadiums and the beautiful buildings, but, like, watching a game in Buckshaw with the crowd jumping, what was that like? Do you appreciate it?
Walking, what, like half a mile to the locker
right.
rooms?
You know, I was half embarrassed for the other teams coming in, you know, because it was pretty bush league. But we loved it. We embraced it. Our fans were awesome. You know, they really loved the Earthquakes and what we were doing, and they supported us so well. And we loved it. And everybody hated coming into Buckshaw, you know, and that was an advantage we had. You know, it wasn't – I don't think it was intentional, but it turned out to be this great, you know, home field advantage for us.
So, Linhart, we'll get to him in a second. Wando, the goal scorer that year, the record, being on his team as he went after it, watching him go after it, how did you experience it? How did you see Wando experience it?
He was just on fire. This guy was on fire. And it was a perfect team for him because, you know, Lenny and I will, you know, bust Wando's balls all the time and how many stitches we had to take for Wando to score 27 goals, you know. We were bashing around and
yeah.
getting red cards. And Wando was, you know, there was a lot of this is not a knock on Wando at all. Obviously, he does it everywhere he goes. But there was so much attention being brought to Lenny. And, you know, I'm not going to put myself in there. But Lenny was, you know, if you see him in the box, the defenders go right to him. And sometimes two of them, because he was a handful, especially back then. He was really a handful. And Wando's just, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant at finding space in the box and knowing where the ball is going to go. And it was like perfect for him because he's so good at doing that. And when the other defenders are being drawn to Lenny or myself or whoever else is in there, then he's going to find it. And he doesn't miss very often.
If you were put into an MLB Hall of Fame and you had to cap yourself, scarf yourself, are you San Jose Earthquakes? Are you Galaxy? What are you going to remember yourself as?
I'm a Galaxy. I remember myself as a Galaxy. I didn't spend enough years with San Jose. Those were some of my favorite years, but it didn't last that long. You know, it was one magical, it was my favorite year with the Earthquakes. But I would say I'm an LA Galaxy, you know, lifer. Because
you're killing San Jose fans, man.
Yeah, well,
like we're always second in this comparison.
Yeah, well, this is not a knock on them at all. I love them as much as I love Galaxy fans, but I see myself as a Galaxy player. I spent almost 11 years of my career there, and you know, it was my first club in the MLS. I won two championships there. And, you know, and so those years when you win trophies, those are special years too. And you know, all that's come along with it.
What does it mean to you to be a Bash brother? Steven is a guy that I've been trying for years to get him to do this exact podcast.
We've been
I hit him up when he's in
Japanese
Japan.
Beaches.
And he's like, are you available at 4 a.m.?
Yeah,
time?
I know.
Lenny, I'm unfortunately not.
Yeah.
Someday we'll get it done. But he is that character in my mind that kind of stands above all else.
He is. And I tell him this all the time. I'm like, I was like, people are so fooled. And you gave me the Bash Brother tag. I wasn't even a Bash Brother. You were the guy. but he became the villain, and I was the likable Bash Brother.
Right.
And so that did a lot for me because he gave us the Bash Brother tag. But I benefited more than he did because he was hated. He was so hated because he was such an animal. and they kind of let me go because they were spending more time, you know, trashing Lenny than they were me. But Lenny, you have to have him on. This guy's so interesting. I would call him on the way to training when he was in Japan, and it'd be like midnight or 1 a.m. He'd be like, he'd answer the FaceTime. He'd be like, I have a bunch of Japanese friends in my apartment and no one speaks English. I'm the only one that speaks English. So he was just like, he was hanging out with people. He had no idea what the language was, but he was just like fully into it. He's such a character, man.
You guys surf together? You guys are good friends, my understanding.
Oh, yeah. We used to wake up before training. We used to get out there before sunrise. We'd be in the water. And we'd be hitting the waves, and then we'd drive an hour and a half over the mountain to go to you know, the Earthquakes training to Santa Clara, and then we'd kill each other. You know, Lenny and I almost fought more than anybody else.
that's a friend's thing. I mean,
yeah, we probably almost threw down like legit 8 times. Like where he's kicking balls at me and I'm in his face and we're yelling at each other and everybody's just like, you guys are stupid. Like, why do you guys always do this?
Where's that come from? How do those things happen? I mean, I remember fighting my best friend back in the day because he pushed me in some mud. I don't know what for you guys, what the trigger is.
Well, the trigger was Lenny and I met each other, it was perfect timing for us both. I was going through some issues in my personal life, and he was going through issues in his personal life that were really deep, and we connected. And so we started carpooling from, you know, Santa Cruz every single day, and we were breaking it down. Like, if you know, if there's one thing about Lenny, he's like a therapist, right? He wants to be a therapist. He loves it, and he loves breaking it down, and he gets all the way down. So we were telling each other the most intimate secrets that we wouldn't tell anybody else. And so we knew each other better. I still know Lenny better, probably better than I know anybody in, you know, in my life aside from my wife and kids. So we could, we know how to push each other's buttons. I mean, when you know somebody that well and you're a little pissed at them, you can say one thing and it'll set them off.
Yeah.
Because it's true. You know, you can say something that's really true that's going to piss them off, you know. And so we should do it to each other all the time. But that's what makes it so great is, you know, and then after training, we'd go back and we'd, you know, skateboard, or he'd come babysit my kids and let me and my wife go out to dinner. You know, he did. I got to.
Oh, that'll earn you points. Let me tell you, I'm still looking at Dave over here.
This, I volunteer.
this kid, Lenny, one funny story about that. My kids were like, my kids are, my two olders are 13 months apart. And Lenny's like, they were 1 year old and, you know, 6 weeks, you know, and Lenny has no experience babysitting kids. He's like, let me do it. And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's pretty tough.
1 year, 6 weeks?
Either way, no, yeah.
A 1 year old and a 6 week old.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
So there's two.
That's a. I don't trust. There's few professional babysitters that I would trust in that situation.
Right, right. And so Lenny's like, let me do it. And I'm like, call me if anything's wrong. And Lenny's so stubborn, he wouldn't call me, but he was having a disaster with my kids. You know, they were crying. He couldn't put them to sleep. And we were teaching him how to put our daughter to sleep at the time. You had to, like, lean over her crib, and you had to wait, and you, like, rub her back, and, like, wait. It was, like, it was terrible. But so we get home, and Lenny's just like, big eyes, his hair's all in a mess. We're like, how'd it go? He's like, it went well. It was all right. And we go into our daughter's room, and we had this, you know, those giant bears at Costco you get, you know? He had one. He propped one up over my daughter's crib so it looked like him, and he staged it because that's the only way he could get her to stop crying, because my son was crying in the other room. It's just classic. It was classic. Oh.
So you skateboard, you surf. Is there any clause in any of your contracts about, like, maybe you shouldn't be so dangerous?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they don't say it, but if you get injured doing one of those things, they're not going to be happy. Yeah, I was snowboarding the whole way through. You know,
good time to go to the Rapids, right?
Yeah. I mean, I got my passes ready. I'm ready to jam. Let's go.
Surfing. I've never surfed. I'm from Kansas. I'm a Midwest person. I don't love the ocean. Tell me about you, the surfer. Had you done that your whole life? Is that something you picked up?
No, I was a beginner surfer. So I grew up in Southern Cal. I grew up near the ocean, but I was more like a boogie boarder when I was young. You know, I wasn't like a surfer. But Lenny is really good. He's a really good surfer. So he grew up surfing, and I had always wanted to do it. So I was like, hey, I'm in. Let's go. Anytime, let's go. And so I was out there just learning in Santa Cruz, and what a spot to learn how to surf. I mean, they got the most, you know, breaks all up and down the coast. It's unbelievable. So many different breaks, and I was out there struggling a lot, because surfing's tough, man. And then and it takes so much energy out of you. And
I can't imagine training.
That's the point. And then we'd go train. An hour and a half to training.
Our days were crazy. We're up at 4:30, and we wouldn't get home till like 2:30, 3 o'clock, you know. And then I was full time with two kids, so we were just kind of going for it, living life to the fullest. And the crazy thing about Lenny is, Lenny would surf before game days. He would surf on game days, and then he'd go out there and be an animal. And I'm like, you're different level, dude. Because I wouldn't do that. I'd be dead. But he was out there surfing on game days. I'm like, you're an idiot.
So it brings up something you mentioned with Beckham, which was, it was like college and it was fun, and then Beckham came and it got different and a little bit more professional. How have you seen that change in the league, like, you know, from when you started to now?
Oh, it's incredible, the difference. You know, we've turned into a legitimate league, and you know, there's really good players, really good teams. There's no easy weekend. There's no teams that, you know you're going to run over. I mean, there's a few here and there, but for the most part, you know, it's night and day. And, you know, back when I started playing, we never did video. We never broke down video because not even half the games were being.
I was going to say, you might not even have had video.
Exactly. And so now we're doing video every single day. The last three or four teams I've been on, We're breaking it down, and it's really serious, and guys are starting to make money, and the pressure's built, but it's turning into a real league, into what it's supposed to be, and I'm really glad that I lasted as long as I did to see that part of it, see, like, the real side of soccer, because, you know, it's getting there.
What was the mindset that you had to have to say, I'm done? What were the stumbling blocks that you went through?
Family. You know, I, at this point, like we said, I love the game. I love playing so much, and I probably would have done it again. But you know, at some point you got to say, hey, where does my family want to be? And I can't keep, my kids are older now, so I don't want to keep dragging them around for something that, you know, I'm not chasing the dream anymore. I've squeezed every drop of lemon juice out of this lemon body. I mean, so I've had, you know, more years than I thought that I would ever have, and then some. So, you know, when it was time for the family just to chill and settle, then I was okay with that. So I've been ready to stop for the last 3 years. I'm glad I didn't, because each year brings new relationships, new experiences, whether they're good, you know, tough or good. It's been really cool.
One of those drops is USMNT. You got called in for like a couple huge games, kind of out of nowhere. Maybe for you, not for you, for us. What do you remember about
out
that?
Of nowhere? I mean, you thought I was going to be a national team player? Are you kidding me? I remember I was in it. I had gotten red carded in San Jose, and Frank gave me the week off. He's like, hey, just go down south and be with your family. Take the week. Like, Frank was great. And I was at a birthday party. And I was wasted, right? And I'm driving in – I'm not driving. I was a passenger in the car. My wife was driving. And my sister and my brother-in-law, they were leaving at the same time. We were kind of following each other out. And I get this call on my phone. And I decided to answer it for some reason. And I answer. Hey. Yeah. And he's like, Alan, this is Jürgen. And I'm like – you're who? I thought I was, telemarketer. And he's like, hey, yeah, this is Jürgen Klinsmann. And I was like, I'm hitting my wife with like my mouth open. I'm like, yeah. He's like, hey, I'd like you to come down and meet us in Mexico for the camp. And I was just like, all right. Yeah, no problem. I'd love to do that. Yeah, see you there. It's a really short conversation, and I didn't have any soccer stuff down there, and they were flying me straight out of L.A. So the next morning, I was on a flight to Mexico with no cleats, no shin guards, no nothing. And Jesse Bagami,
yep,
he had to buy me boots down in Mexico, so he ran across the street to the mall and got me some boots. I trained one day, and I was in Mexico in our first ever victory against Mexico in Azteca. And I saw from the stands, but it was fun to be part of the group. And I was 30 years old, you know, and I was like a little kid, because, you know, guys that I had played with, that I was, you know, Landon and all these guys, I just thought the national team was so cool, because, when Bruce was there, the first stint, it was such a select group. It was such a small group and a family, and it was like nobody was getting into that unless you were really, you know, a player, you know. And so I always looked at the national team with the highest respect. And so for me to put on that practice uniform, was, if that was it, then I would have been, you know, I was beyond. So it was really, really something special.
No goals. You did have an assist, though, against the Giants of Antigua and Barbuda.
Oh, yeah.
But that was an important game. Yeah, it was
really important.
It was a huge game. Yeah. Well, if you remember that game, it was soaking wet. It was probably one of the sloppiest games I've ever played with. I mean, there was puddles that were 10 feet wide in the field, and guys were slipping everywhere. And I only played with one set of boots back then. I only had one, and I didn't have any studs. And Jürgen turns to the bench. He goes, if you guys don't have studs on, you're not going in the game. So I tucked my cleats like under my under the seat so he couldn't see it. And he eventually subbed me on, and I got that assist. And that was cool, man. That was really cool. That was a highlight of my career for sure.
What do you think? What's the number one highlight? When you look back, I know it's hard to It's kind of cliched to go into that, but what's kind of the shining moment for you?
Well, that
you got two MLS Cups, so I guess you could choose those.
No, it's the national team. It's playing for stepping foot on a field in a real game, and that was a World Cup qualifier.
Yeah, that was a big game
for my first match. That was it. That's the peak. I mean, I can't pick something else because that was the pinnacle.
Tell me about 2014 and that MLS Cup and that team, because that team, when you go back and talk about the best teams in MLS history, the best seasons, you guys are there for good reason. And Keno, by the way, just retired. We're recording this, I don't know, sometime in November. He just retired yesterday.
It was so cool. It was so much fun to be on that team. I got traded from San Jose, and they were telling me that I had a career-ending injury. My hip was all messed up. And I was, you know, I thought I was going to retire. I thought I was done because my hip was really not feeling good at all. You know, strange thing is, I won't get into that, but I got traded twice, actually. I won't get into that. It's that's a long, but to go there and to see Keno at his prime, kind of in the MLS, we'll just say that, was so rewarding for me as a player. Just watching him, watching his movements, watch what he did, and I tried to emulate what he was doing on the field, and I learned a lot. And then you had Landon, who was flying around the whole team. It was great, and Bruce had built such a family. A great family atmosphere for the team. All the wives were hanging out. There was massive amounts of kids. There was kids in the locker room. It was just so fun. And right when I got there, the season had kind of turned around and we started going on this run, and we were playing some really good soccer. And just to watch Robbie score the goals that he did, it's just you're his teammate, but you know, for the rest of your life, you're gonna look at it like, you know, wow, that was really cool to be there, while he was doing that and had the season that he did, and we eventually won, and I got to play, a good part in that team, and so I felt like I was a part of that team, and I had helped them win the cup, and that was really, really special for me, and. You know, by the way, my kids were born then, and they got to see that. And my first championship, you know, my kids weren't even an afterthought, you know, and so they were there on the field, and that was really special to me. When the whistle blew, I just lost it. I started crying because I thought my career was over, and I kind of revamped it, or that team helped me revamp it, just because they were just a well-oiled machine, and I just kind of fit right in, and because I had a lot of relationships with those guys, and it was easy to just plug right back in, and it was kind of a resurgence of my career in the later stages, which was cool.
How often does Robbie Keane host a party where people chant Robbie Keane? Because I've seen videos.
Yeah, I feel like if he could, he'd have them follow him around everywhere he went. Yeah, he's a ledge.
Where in terms of best players you've played against, played with in this league, what's your upper echelon?
You know, that's hard, but when Robbie was on fire and him and Landon were clicking, I thought he was the best player the best striker the MLS had ever seen. Since then, there's been other guys that have come in, and they're great players, like, you know, Giovinco and all these guys. But I just think, you know, let's not compare him like who's better. Keno was so cutthroat. He has such a killer instinct that I don't think any player, it was even close. I can't think of another player that's even close to how, I mean, this guy, he had to win. It was, and that's a powerful motivator when your best player wants to win more than you and everybody else combined. And that's why we won, because Landon was the same way too. Landon wanted to win as well, and we had a bunch of winners on that team, and that's what wins championships.
How did Keno show you that outside of the 90 minutes?
This guy, he was kind of a psycho about winning and scoring goals. He was never satisfied. Never. He could score 9 goals in training and small-sided, which he usually did. And if his team lost, he was storming off the field, and he was pissed. you know, and that's a winner to me. That's rare, and you don't see it a lot anymore. I mean, I was just, you know, the last couple teams I was on, you know, the young guys, it seems like they don't care if they win or lose, you know, and I think that's something that is changed a lot since I was young. When I was young, all the veterans were psycho that way. They were all competitors. You know, they were more competitors than soccer players, and now we're kind of more soccer players than competitors. And I'd rather have the other way, if you ask me.
Look toward the next 5, 10, 20 years of this league. Alan, what do you hope for? What do you think is coming? Prognosticate a little bit and maybe dream a little bit.
I'd like to see, you know, what I think is going to happen is this league is going to continue to grow. I think that's pretty obvious. But what I'd like to see happen is more owners that are coming in to the league that are like, you know, Arthur Blank and owners like that, that really want to grow the sport in the right way. I think that there's, the more we have guys like that, that want to put out atmospheres like that we just saw the other night. I mean, it is the most exciting thing you can be a part of in this country, you know, sports wise. I don't care what you say. NFL is really cool. It's really popular. I love the NFL, but in game experience, you cannot beat a Portland or a Seattle or an Atlanta when it's going off. Americans, we never figured out how to do that, and we've adopted the European way of chanting and creating these environments that you guys know. You guys have been there. There's no other sporting event like it when it's popping off.
I was at a Brooklyn Nets game last night, and they had like one of the guys that does the stuff on the floor, this employee up waving a flag in the stands during a break, and it was like, oh, I see what you're trying to emulate
right
here. You just don't quite have the authenticity to do it. Before I let you go, what's in the plans, man? What do you want to do?
What's the next 5 years for Alan Gordon?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I think I want to stay in the game in some shape or form. What that is yet, I don't know. If anybody's listening to this, give me a call.
I hope somebody's listening to this.
But I want to stay in the game. I want to give back. I've been given a lot. I've been very fortunate and lucky, like I said earlier. And I love helping younger players. I love talking to them. I love relating to them. So I want to give back, man.
All right. If you're listening, hit us up. You know how to get it, Alan. Find him. All right. That's story time. You were right there. Mike McGee, Pescadito. Maybe not Pescadito.
Liar.
Maybe not Pescadito, but you can tell Mike that you're on par.
All right, cool.
Certainly better
also,
than Dax
you can
McCarty.
Tell Lenny that you were better than he will ever be. Maybe that will get him to come on.
There you go.
Someday.
I'll get him on. If you guys really want him, I'll get him on.
We will take you up on that all for right. Sure. That's Alan Gordon. That's MLS Storytime.